This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, I'm Barb Najala, and you're listening to Strange Brew. Tonight, I'll be reading stories with unusual facts, little-known history, and other random information from January 2024 and February 2024 Mental Floss Online. Mental Floss stories, on occasion, contain language and content that some might find offensive. I hope you'll enjoy the program. From mentalfloss.com. Till March do us part. March and August are the most popular months for divorce filings. By Michelle Debchak, January 2024. Summer and the holiday season may put a strain on your marriage. According to research and anecdotal reports from lawyers, divorce rates follow a biannual pattern, spiking in August and March. An analysis by University of Washington sociologists presented in 2016 revealed that the chances of a couple filing for divorce rose considerably during those 2 months. One possible explanation researchers gave for the trend is the raised expectations and inevitable disappointment that comes with the winter and summer holidays. The holidays represent periods in the year when there's the anticipation or the opportunity for a new beginning, a new start, something different, a transition into a new period of life. Researcher and associate sociology professor Julie Brines said in a press release, "It's like an optimism cycle in a sense." Brines also points out that these seasons represent culturally sacred times, so filing for divorce in the middle of summer vacation or before a trip to see the in-laws might be seen as inappropriate. In some cases, the forced togetherness that comes from trips and family visits may be what sends an already precarious marriage over the edge. If kids are involved, parents may feel pressured to stick it out until school is back in session. Though the study was limited to couples in Washington state, researchers said they found comparable patterns in Minnesota, Florida, and Arizona, where divorce laws are similar but demographics and economic conditions diverge. Data based on general breakups rather than divorces, specifically, also suggests that spring is a rough time for love. When data visualization expert David McCandless searched 10,000 Facebook statuses for the phrases breakup and broken up around 2010, March was one of the months that came up the most. The second peak he saw also occurred around the winter holidays, but Facebook users tended to get their splits out of the way 2 weeks ahead of Christmas, rather than riding the relationship out until the new year. Fewer presents to buy that way. A version of this story ran in 2016. It has been updated for 2024. From mentalfloss.com, 12 famous figures born on February 29th by Michelle Debchak. February 2024. When it comes to who has the rarest birthday, leap day babies have no competition. They were born on February 29th. The date that gets tacked onto the end of the second month whenever a leap year occurs, once every 4 years. So instead of celebrating their birthday once every 365 days, members of this group have to wait 1,461 days for the true date of their birth to appear on the calendar. People born on a leap day represent less than 0.1% of the world's population. Of that already tiny demographic, an even smaller number of leap day babies have grown up to become famous entertainers, leaders, and athletes. From Al Rosen to Ja Rule, here are 10 of the most notable celebrities and historical figures born on February 29th. 1. Ja Rule was born in New York City on a leap day in 1976. Though he'll be turning 48 years old this year, the rapper is technically celebrating his 12th birthday in 2024. For his 10th birthday party 2 leap years ago, in 2016, he kicked off his Las Vegas residency at the Foxtail Nightclub. 2. Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins, who was born on February 29, 1960, is best known as a motivational speaker and the author of Awaken the Giant Within. He's also a famous leap day baby. In 2024, he'll be turning 64 on what's technically his 16th birthday. That's a long time to wait to celebrate your sweet 16. 3. Peter Scannavino. Peter Scannavino got his big break playing Dominic Sonny Carisi Jr. on Law and Order SVU. He was born on a leap day in 1980, which means the 44-year-old actor will be marking his 11th birthday on February 29, 2024. 4. Mark Foster. February 29, 2024 marks a major milestone for musical artist Mark Foster. In addition to turning 40 years old, he will also get to celebrate his actual birthday, which he's had the opportunity to do just 9 times in the past. The Foster the People frontman was born on a leap day in 1984. 5. Morarji Desai. The former Prime Minister of India was born on February 29, 1896, and died on April 10, 1995. Despite living to the age of 99, Morarji Desai marked just 24 birthdays while he was alive. Because he was born during Holi, Desai chose to celebrate his birthday on the Indian Holi Day instead of waiting for a leap day every 4 years. 6. Dinah Shore. Dinah Shore achieved stardom as a singer and television personality during the 1940s and 50s. She was also a famous leap day baby, having been born on February 29th in 1916. She died at age 77 in 1994 after celebrating 19 birthdays. 7. Gioachino Rossini. The famous opera The Barber of Seville was composed by a leap day baby. Gioachino Rossini was born in Italy on February 29, 1792, and showed talent from a young age. William Tell and Cinderella are some of the other titles in his impressive body of work, which comprises 39 operas. He died in 1868, which also happened to be a leap year. 8. Pope Paul III. The Catholic Church has seen 266 popes, and only one that we know of was born on February 29th. On top of coming into the world on a leap day in 1486, Pope Paul III was notable for being the last Renaissance pope. The modern Gregorian calendar was established by a different pope, Gregory XIII. In 1582. While his version overhauled the leap year system, the calendrical quirk was already being observed in Paul III's time. 9. Alex Rocco. Though he's best known for playing Mo Green in The Godfather in 1972, Alex Rocco had a long and varied screen career. He won the 1990 Emmy for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy for his work on the famous Teddy Z, and he lent his vocal talents to The Simpsons. He was born on a leap day in 1936 and died in 2015. 10. Al Rosen. Al Rosen's 10-year run as Cleveland's third baseman solidified him as an MLB legend. In 1953, he became the American League's MVP with 43 home runs and 145 RBI. Here's another impressive stat. Al Rosen celebrated just 22 birthdays, despite living to be 91. He was born on February 29, 1924, and died in 2015. 11. Jack Lusma. When Jack Lusma celebrates his birthday on February 29, 2024, he'll be 88 years young. The date marks the 22nd birthday the NASA astronaut has seen in his lifetime. Lusma spent more than 1,600 hours in space during his career, which makes the question of his age even more complicated. Due to the time-dilating effects of relativity, people actually age slower in space than they do on Earth. 12. Cameron Ward. The NHL's most famous leap year baby was born on February 29, 1984. For most of his career, Cam Ward was a goaltender for the Carolina Hurricanes, and in 2019, he officially retired from ice hockey. In 2024, the athlete will celebrate what's technically his 10th birthday after 40 years on Earth. From mentalfloss.com, why does the Super Bowl use Roman numerals? By Jake Rosson, February 2024. Every year, tens of millions of people tune into the Super Bowl to find out which football team will be the crowned winner for the current season. In 2024, the Kansas City Chiefs will be standing opposite the San Francisco 49ers. And while it's the 58th edition of the contest, it's not referred to as Super Bowl 58. Instead, it's marketed as Super Bowl LVIII. So why does the National Football League insist on using Roman numerals for this most modern of sporting events? Simple. The NFL is hoping to avoid confusing you. The Super Bowl is traditionally held in the year following the beginning of the regular season schedule. The winner of the Chiefs-49ers game will technically be the 2023 Super Bowl champions. If the league opted to follow the lead of the NBA or MLB and label their championship with the year, then it would become difficult to follow. If this were Super Bowl 2024, shouldn't it really be Super Bowl 2023? And if it were, why is it being contested in 2024? It's a semantics issue, but one that would quickly create confusion. That doesn't address why the NFL opts for Roman numerals over numbers. It goes back to clarity. If this were Super Bowl 58, then it's possible some people might conflate the event name and number with the year. Super Bowl XXII, for example, which was held in 1988, might get mixed up with Super Bowl 2022, which was actually Super Bowl LVI. It's simply easier to use Roman numerals to avoid the issue completely. It was actually Chiefs founder Lamar Hunt who suggested that Super Bowls use Roman numerals, which substitute letters for numbers. X is 10, V is 5, I is 1, and so on. Hunt, who had noticed some sports writers using the format, floated the idea to NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle in 1970. Prior to that, the first four events used numbers. It's not likely Hunt was thinking of avoiding confusion. Instead, Hunt believed the style lent the Super Bowl a kind of gravitas and signaled it was a major event. This would further establish the tie to the past and also, in my opinion, add a bit of class to our unclassy name, he wrote to Roselle. Beginning with Super Bowl V, letters became the norm and the previous events were renamed to follow the format. The NFL did abandon the system once. For Super Bowl L, or the 50th Super Bowl, the league opted to use Super Bowl 50 since the L was typographically odd-looking. That wasn't Hunt's only contribution either. He's credited with coining the name Super Bowl. Of course, all of this presumes the term Super Bowl LVII will be in heavy rotation. On the sports pages, maybe, but because the NFL has trademarked Super Bowl, advertisers and other commercial outlets tend to use phrases like the big game, bypassing both the name and the Roman numerals entirely. The NFL even tried trademarking it to little avail. It's probably just as well. Big game, LVIII, doesn't have quite the same ring to it. From mentalfloss.com, 8 Things You Might Not Know About Meryl Streep by Jake Rawson, February 2024. Pick any random Academy Awards ceremony over the last 40-plus years, and it may seem as though Meryl Streep is as much a presence as the Oscar statue itself. That's because the actress has been nominated a staggering 21 times since 1978 in both the Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress categories, winning 3 times for 1979's Kramer vs. Kramer, 1982's Sophie's Choice, and 2011's The Iron Lady. Now 74, Streep isn't up for any recognition during the 2024 ceremony, but she remains the gold standard for screen acting. Here, check out some facts about her early television work, her time playing a 7-year-old, and why she's not particularly fond of Rotten Tomatoes. 1. Meryl Streep wanted to be a lawyer, but overslept. Born in Summit, New Jersey on June 22, 1949, Streep began acting while playing a robot in a grade school play. That led to leading roles in school musicals and eventually enrollment at Vassar College and the Yale School of Drama, though she briefly considered veering into law instead. However, Streep said she slept through her board exams. 2. Streep's first screen performance was on television. After school, Streep began garnering attention in Manhattan for her stage work. She appeared in 6 leading roles in less than a year. Then, in 1977, Streep appeared in a made-for-television movie, The Deadliest Season, that predated a big screen debut that year in the World War II drama Julia. The TV film was about a hockey player who kills a rival on the ice and subsequently stands trial for manslaughter. Streep portrayed the player's wife. Streep also appeared in the 1978 miniseries Holocaust, for which she won an Emmy. 3. Streep left her first Oscar in the bathroom. Following 1978's The Deer Hunter, in which she co-starred with partner John Cazale, Streep made a splash with 1979's Kramer vs. Kramer. The divorce drama with Dustin Hoffman was a grueling experience for Streep. Hoffman tried to elicit an emotional response from her during their scenes by invoking the recent passing of Cazale from lung cancer. After winning the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for her work in the film, Streep famously left the statuette on the bathroom floor, but fortunately managed to retrieve it before the end of the ceremony. 4. Silkwood prompted Streep to pick a specific house. Streep found the idea of nuclear power discomforting after her performance as nuclear plant whistleblower Karen Silkwood in 1983's Silkwood. So much so, in fact, that it influenced a real estate purchase. According to a 2004 New York Times profile, Streep purchased a home in Connecticut precisely because it was a safe 90 miles away from any nuclear facility. "We actually drew the circles on a map," she said. 5. She once played a 7-year-old. Streep continued to alternate between stage and screen work into the 1980s. In 1978, she appeared as Alice of Alice in Wonderland fame in Alice in Concert, a musical adaptation of Lewis Carroll's works. At 29, Streep was considerably older than the Alice featured in the books. She also returned to the role in 1981. 6. Streep has a problem with Rotten Tomatoes. In 2015, while promoting Suffragette, Streep voiced a critique for the popular critic aggregate website Rotten Tomatoes. The site, she argued, had a disproportionate number of male critics. By Streep's own count, the site had 760 men to 168 women. "I submit to you that men and women are not the same. They like different things. Sometimes they like the same thing, but sometimes their tastes diverge. If the tomato meter is slighted so completely to one set of tastes, that drives box office in the United States. Absolutely," she said. Rotten Tomatoes has made steps to be more inclusive. Since 2018, the site says it's added over 1,000 new critics, 50% of whom are women. 7. Streep has a unique connection to Alien. Streep doesn't often venture into genre movies, save for the 1994's action thriller, The River Wild. But she was considered for the lead role of Ellen Ripley in 1979's sci-fi classic, Alien. Director Ridley Scott and casting director Martin Goldberg wanted Streep for Ripley. When that didn't pan out, the part went to Sigourney Weaver. As it happened, Streep and Weaver were classmates at Yale School of Drama. 8. Streep trademarked her name. In 2018, Streep filed for a trademark for her name as it relates to live, televised, and movie appearances by a professional actress and entertainer. Some celebrities make the attempt in order to prevent unauthorized use of their name for endorsements or false advertising. The trademark was for Streep's stage, not legal name. Her real full name is Mary Louise Streep. Early in her career, talent agents suggested she change it to Merle Street. Fortunately, common sense prevailed. From mentalfloss.com, 10 Facts About the Flu by Stacy Conrad, February 2024. The seasonal flu is a fact of life, but you get your annual flu shot, your likelihood of suffering the flu's unpleasant symptoms decreases. Here's what else you should know about the ever-circulating virus. 1. The flu vaccine can't give you the flu. The vaccines contain a dead piece of the flu virus, and a dead virus cannot infect you. There is a nasal vaccine that contains a live virus, but that particular vaccine is designed to seek and destroy the part of the virus that actually makes you sick. 2. You can treat the flu. Up to 48 hours after the onset of symptoms, a doctor can prescribe antiviral medicine that will help. It's not going to get rid of the virus entirely, but it will lessen the time that you're curled up on the couch watching game shows and cursing life. 3. The 1918 to 1920 flu outbreak is the best known influenza pandemic. The so-called Spanish flu killed between 40 million and 100 million people worldwide at the tail end of World War I. It was so severe that it registered a level 5, a maximum, on the pandemic severity scale. The mortality rate was, by some estimates, as high as 20%. People that got it and survived include Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Walt Disney, Mary Pickford, General John J. Pershing, and Woodrow Wilson. 5. The flu can still be deadly. In the U.S. alone, the flu season results in 36,000-ish deaths and 200,000 hospitalizations. As if those facts weren't painful enough, the seasonal flu costs Americans a collective $10 billion annually. 6. British students come down with the fresher's flu. While we in the U.S. have freshman 15, the Brits have fresher's flu. Up to 90% of people during their first few weeks at college end up getting sick. And whether it's actually the flu or not, it's often just a cold, the nickname has a nice ring to it. 7. People who say they have the stomach flu probably don't. Stomach flu is a nickname that came about because it makes you feel crappy in similar ways to the real flu. But if you have only a stomach ache without the additional body aches or fever, you probably just have a gastrointestinal virus of some sort. 8. You don't need to starve a fever. There isn't much truth in the old saying, feed a cold, starve a fever. Fever is one of the main symptoms of the flu, and if you have one, you should increase your fluid intake. But there's no need to decrease the amount of food you eat. In fact, nibbling on healthy meals will help your body recover from the virus. 9. The flu has been around for a long time. The Greek physician Hippocrates wrote of an illness with a description closely matching today's modern flu symptoms. 10. The most recent flu pandemic was in 2009. The H1N1 PDM09 flu virus emerged in April 2009. And because it was so different than earlier mutations of the H1N1 virus, few people under the age of 60 had immunity to it. The CDC estimates that between April 2009 and April 2010, there were about 61 million cases of H1N1 PDM09 flu, about 274,000 hospitalizations, and more than 12,000 deaths in the USA alone. And that's all we have time for tonight. You've been listening to Strange Brew, with stories from January 2024 and February 2024, mentalfloss.com. I hope you enjoyed the program and you'll tune in again to Strange Brew next Friday, when I'll be reading Farfetched, Totally Bogus News Stories from TheOnion.com. Until then, this is Barb Magella wishing you a good evening and a great week.